New heading, Organizational Mission Statements. Mission statements are also vital to successful organizations. One of the most important thrusts of my work with organizations is to assist them in developing effective mission statements. And to be effective, that statement has to come from within the bowels of the organization, top down and bottom up. Everyone should participate in a meaningful way. Not just the top strategy planners, but everyone. Once again, the involvement process is as important as the written product and is the key to its continual use. I am always intrigued whenever I go to IBM and watch the training process there. Time and time again, I see the leadership of the organization come into a group and say that IBM stands for three things: the dignity of the individual, excellence, and service. These things represent the belief system of IBM. Everything else will change, but these three things will not change. Almost like osmosis, this belief system has spread throughout an entire organization, providing a tremendous base of shared values and personal security for everyone who works there. Once I was training a group of people for IBM in New York. It was a small group, about 20 people, and one of them became ill. He called his wife in California, who expressed concern because his illness required special treatment. The IBM people responsible for the training session arranged to have him taken to an excellent hospital with medical specialists in the disease. But they could sense that his wife was uncertain and really wanted him home, where their personal physician could handle the problem. So they decided to get him home. Concerned about the time involved in driving him to the airport and waiting for a commercial plane, they brought in a helicopter, flew him to the airport, and hired a special plane just to take this man to California. I don't know what cost that involved. My guess would be many thousands of dollars. But IBM believed in the dignity of the individual. That's what the company stands for. To those present, that experience represented its belief system and was no surprise. I was impressed. At another time, I was scheduled to train 175 shopping center managers at a particular hotel. I was amazed at the level of service there. It wasn't a cosmetic thing. It was evident at all levels, spontaneously, without supervision. I arrived quite late, checked in, and asked if room service was available. The man at the desk said, "No, Mr. Covey, but if you're interested, I could go back and get a sandwich or a salad or whatever you'd like that we have in the kitchen." His attitude is one of total concern about my comfort and welfare. "Would you like to see your convention room?" he continued. "Do you have everything you need? What can I do for you? I'm here to serve you." There was no supervisor there checking up. This man was sincere. The next day, I was in the middle of a presentation when I discovered that I didn't have all of the colored markers I needed. I went out into the hall during a brief break and found a bellboy running to another convention. "I've got a problem," I said. "I'm here training a group of managers, and I only have a short break. I need some more colored pens." He whipped around and almost came to attention. He glanced at my name tag and said, "Mr. Covey, I will solve your problem." He didn't say, "I don't know where to go," or, "Well, go and check at the front desk." He just took care of it. And he made me feel like it was his privilege to do so. Later, I was in a side lobby looking at some of the art objects. Someone from the hotel came up to me and said, "Mr. Covey, would you like to see a book that describes the art objects in this hotel?" How anticipatory. How service-oriented. I next observed one of the employees high up on a ladder, cleaning windows in the lobby. From his vantage point, he saw a woman having a little difficulty in the garden with a walker. She hadn't really fallen, and she was with other people. But he climbed down that ladder, went outside, helped the woman into the lobby, and saw that she was properly taken care of. Then he went back and finished cleaning the windows. I wanted to find out how this organization had created a culture where people bought so deeply into the value of customer service. I interviewed housekeepers, waitresses, bellboys in that hotel, and found that this attitude had impregnated the hearts, minds, and attitudes of every employee there. I went through the back door into the kitchen, where I saw the central value: uncompromising, personalized service. I finally went to the manager and said, "My business is helping organizations develop a powerful team character, a team culture. I'm amazed at what you have here." "Do you want to know the real key?" he inquired. He pulled out the mission statement for the hotel chain. After reading it, I acknowledged, "That's an impressive statement. But I know many companies that have impressive mission statements." "Do you want to see the one for this hotel?" he asked. "Do you mean you developed one just for this hotel?" "Yes." "Different from the one for the hotel chain?" "Yes." "It's in harmony with that statement, but this one pertains to our situation, our environment, our time." He handed me another paper. "Who developed this mission statement?" I asked. "Everybody," he replied. "Everybody? I mean, really everybody?" "Yes." "Housekeepers?" "Yes." "Waitresses?" "Yes." "Desk clerks?" "Yes." "Do you want to see the mission statement written by the people who greeted you last night?" He pulled out a mission statement that they themselves had written that was interwoven with all of the other mission statements. Everyone at every level was involved. The mission statement for that hotel was the hub of a great wheel. It spawned the thoughtful, more specialized mission statements of particular groups of employees. It was used as a criterion for every decision that was made. It clarified what those people stood for, how they related to the customer, how they related to each other. It affected the style of the managers and the leaders. It affected the compensation system. It affected the kind of people they recruited and how they trained and developed them. Every aspect of that organization, essentially, was a function of that hub, that mission statement. I later visited another hotel in the same chain, and the first thing I did when I checked in was to ask to see their mission statement, which they promptly gave me. At this hotel, I came to understand the motto, "Uncompromising personalized service," a little more. For a 3-day period, I watched every conceivable situation where service was called for. I always found that service was delivered in a very impressive, excellent way. But it was always also very personalized. For instance, in the swimming area, I asked the attendant where the drinking fountain was. He walked me to it. But the thing that impressed me the very most was to see an employee on his own admit a mistake to his boss. We ordered room service and were told when it would be delivered to the room. On the way to our room, the room service person spilled the hot chocolate, and it took a few extra minutes to go back and change the linen on the tray and replace the drink. So the room service was about 15 minutes late, which was really not that important to us. Nevertheless, the next morning, the room service manager phoned us to apologize and invited us to have either the buffet breakfast or a room service breakfast compliments of the hotel, to in some way compensate for the inconvenience. What does it say about the culture of an organization when an employee admits his mistake, unknown to anyone else, to the manager so that the customer or guest is better taken care of? As I told the manager of the first hotel I visited, I know a lot of companies with impressive mission statements, but there is a real difference, all of the difference in the world, in the effectiveness of a mission statement created by everyone involved in an organization, and one written by a few top executives behind a mahogany wall. One of the fundamental problems in organizations, including families, is that people are not committed to the determinations of other people for their lives. They simply don't buy into them. Many times as I work with organizations, I find people whose goals are totally different from the goals of the enterprise. I commonly find reward systems completely out of alignment with shared value systems. When I begin work with companies that have already developed some kind of mission statement, I ask them, "How many of the people here know that you have a mission statement? How many of you know what it contains? How many were involved in creating it? How many really buy into it and use it as your frame of reference in making decisions?" Without involvement, there is no commitment. Mark it down, asterisk it, circle it, underline it. No involvement, no commitment. Now, in the early stages, When a person is new to an organization or when a child in the family is young, you can pretty well give them a goal and they'll buy it, particularly if the relationship, the orientation, and the training are good. But as people become more mature and their lives take on a separate meaning, they want involvement, significant involvement. And if they don't have that involvement, they don't buy it. Then you have a significant motivational problem, which cannot be solved at the same level of thinking that created it. That's why creating an organizational mission statement takes time, patience, involvement, skill, and empathy. Again, it's not a quick fix. It takes time and sincerity, correct principles, and the courage and integrity to align systems, structure, and management style to the shared vision and values. But it's based on correct principles, and it works. An organizational mission statement, one that truly reflects the deeply shared visions and values of everyone within that organization, creates a great unity and a tremendous commitment. It creates in people's hearts and minds a frame of reference, a set of criteria or guidelines by which they will govern themselves. They don't need someone else directing, controlling, criticizing, or taking cheap shots. They have bought into the changeless core of what the organization is all about. Here are a few application suggestions in applying Habit 2, begin with the end in mind. 1. Take the time to record the impressions you had in the funeral visualization at the beginning of this chapter. Remember to focus on those four areas of activity: family, friends, work, community service, and so forth. And look at three basic aspects: character, contributions, and achievements. 2. Take a few moments and write down your roles as you now see them. Are you satisfied with that mirror image of your life? 3. Set up time to completely separate yourself from daily activities and to begin to work on your personal mission statement. 4. Think through very carefully the different centers of a person's life and see what you have come to find your center to be. 5. Start a collection of notes, quotes, and ideas you may want to use as resource material in writing your personal mission statement. 6. Identify a project you will be facing in the near future and apply the principle of mental creation. Write down the results you desire and what steps will lead to those results. 7. Share the principles of Habit 2 with your family or work group and suggest that together you begin the process of developing a family or a group mission statement.